guys, just want to send a quick apology to Jason Lee and anyone listening. There's some static on my mic for this episode. I was testing a new Bluetooth mic, which worked in a test, but unfortunately didn't come through in this live audio, and we weren't able to re-record it. So thanks for your patience with that. Welcome to the Rewired Podcast. This is episode 29, and today I'm joined by a good friend of mine, Jason Lee. Jason is a father to three children, and we discussed doing this podcast a while back around fatherhood and growth mindset. And maybe this might be the perfect time because of the quarantine. We're a little over 8 weeks in now, and it's an interesting time. So, Jason, thank you so much for joining me today, brother.
Hey, Brian. The pleasure is mine, and I can't tell you how happy it makes me to hear the 29th episode. Just as an aside, the positive energy that you bring to me based on your initiatives and the things that you're doing, I want to thank you for that. And again, the 29th episode, to see you kind of driving this, it's really energizing. So congrats to you.
I appreciate that, brother. Thank you so much. I'm definitely committed to continuing on this path of podcasting. Even if it only touches a few people at a time, it's certainly worthwhile, and I've had some good feedback, so thank you for that. So, brother, tell me how you've been making out so far. We're into week 8 in the quarantine so far. How have you been managing with the family at home? What's the latest with you guys?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great point. So, like, last night was one of those days where it was like, hey, I'm calling Brian and saying, listen, the call's off. There's no point in having it. But that being said, let me take a giant step back and say, you know, when we talked about doing this, I wanted to make sure it was under the pretense that I am by no means an expert. And because I find it difficult, I think is a great reason why we should talk about it, because the concept of mindset and mindfulness and how it incorporates into turning weaknesses into strengths, I think that's a big factor in any successful fatherhood journey. So from that perspective, when I woke up this morning, for me, it was like, yeah, let's get this call going. Let's talk about the hardships. Let's talk about the successes. And hopefully, like you said, someone's listening and they can find some value from that.
Absolutely, brother. Okay, so to frame things up a little bit, so what do you got going on the home front? You've got three kids. What are the ages?
Yeah, I got three kids. My oldest boy is 12 years old. My middle boy is 10 years old. And then I got a little girl who's 5. They're all October babies, coincidentally. So another quick aside, my wife and I tend to stay away from each other towards the end of January.
February. I was going to say, that's the sweet spot right there, I guess.
Yeah, if you believe in kind of those chakra alignments and energy forces, that's a real one for us.
Yeah, well, I happen to believe in that, so that's interesting.
Yeah.
So how are they all holding up?
Yeah,
I guess the different ages, different things, right? I'm sure the 12-year-old is missing the friends more and things like that, but what's your experience?
Yeah, it's a great question because they are experiencing it in such different ways. The 12-year-old, a social perspective, he's also the one that's on social media and kind of more in tune with different ways of connecting with his friends. So he's got that aspect going. He's also big into gaming now, right? So there's an opportunity for some sort of social interaction through gaming. The one thing he misses the most is he's an avid athlete. And up until quarantine, you know, it would be almost five out of the 7 days where he would be involved in some form of athletic endeavor, whether it be team sport based or individual training. And all of that has really been shut down. So, you know, we were talking earlier about the different labels that we wear. Add personal trainer to the list for me on that one, because fortunately we've had good weather here out in BC, and we're out in the backyard as much as we can, keeping that going. But so he's been able to leverage the different technologies that we have out there to kind of keep in touch. The school work has been coming, although minimal. And then I took it upon myself, and this is more of a fun thing, is we put together a curriculum, a daily agenda for him, because again, he is older and he can kind of self-direct himself to do those things. So he's actually been very easy to deal with. Our 10-year-old, you know, his default is to kind of sit on YouTube all day if he can. So, and then just to be open with you and the audience, he also has special needs. So from that perspective, he's taken up a lot of our attention. Now, the great thing about that is that, his school, he goes to a specialized school for kids that are like him. They've been amazing in terms of they were very quick to put up online capabilities. They've been very thorough in their follow-ups and their ability to drive actual classes through the online mediums. So from an actual scheduling perspective, he's had the most, and I think that's been helpful. But you know, from his perspective, even the age group, he's definitely just, if you let him sit on his on screen and watch YouTube and play those games all day, he would absolutely 100% do that. So that's been a challenge. And then our 5-year-old, you know, she's like all 5-year-olds, just energetic and running around. And she, you know, when this is all over and she looks back on this and she can remember it, I think she's going to think it was the best time in the world because, you know, mommy and daddy are both home. You know, we're having family dinners on a regular basis. We're baking a lot. We're outside playing a lot. So it'll be interesting to get her perspective on this, right? When it's all said and done and things go back to normal, she'll be like, I want to go back to the quarantine days.
Yeah, man. That's interesting. My son is 5, my daughter's 7. So they're probably a little closer to, your 5-year-old sort of attitude with this right now, but we took a little bike ride yesterday by the school. I looked at my son, I'm like, hey, so Jackson, you miss being here? He just goes, no, I'm good. No, he's just happy. So we're all home. But you know, it's interesting. I was thinking about this. It kind of feels a lot more like, screens aside, it feels a lot more like how I grew up, you know, back in the, back in the 80s and, you know, just like riding your bike every day, spending time outside, just keeping yourself busy with puzzles and things. It's there's really a bit of wholesome feel about it.
Yeah, it really has. And from a parenting perspective, that you know, that whole concept of, you know, stop and smell the flowers, people are really embracing that. And again, if you're active on social media, you see this type of attitude being proliferated amongst the families that I'm friends with on social media. So if there's a positive that comes out of this, I think there's a few positives, and you know, you're always looking for silver linings. I think the effects on the environment that some regions are reporting due to lesser activity, I think that's a positive, right, that we can look at. And then definitely this increased value, or at least increased effort to incorporate family time. You know, I think a lot of people are going to look back and say, hey, that wasn't a bad thing.
Yeah, exactly. And like you said, with your daughter, right, they'll look back at this time and they'll be like, wow, we never had so much attention from mom and dad, always there. You know, I can tell you, my dogs and my cats are like, wow, this is good, man. We're getting 24/7 love here. I'm just looking at the cat thinking, just leave me alone. But you said two things earlier that were really interesting, and screens and schedules. And I think those are like two big things to sort of manage. But first with the schedules, I think that's great that you're doing the daily schedule for your older son. But in general, do you guys have like a kind of a daily family checklist of things that you try to cover off? I mean, I find that gives us sort of direction and purpose every day, outside of what I have to deal with the business side of things.
Yeah, I think definitely before this, the COVID time and quarantine and self-isolation, it was at a more loose scheduling, right? So we did limit. There's always been limits on actual screen time for the kids. There's always been a requirement that there's some activity time. And that, when everyone's here, that we have dinners together. So that's kind of the loose scheduling, and then kind of schedules and whatever events or things that we have to do kind of control the rest of it. So we did have those kind of very loose schedule or event type of things in place that we tried to stick to. It really, the crazy thing about that is, you know, and this is where I say, when you become a parent and you truly embrace parenthood, the judgments, like you throw those things out first, right? It's now a judgment-free zone, right? So every family creates their normal or creates what's right for them, and you know, I think then when you think about scheduling, people always think, oh well, by a certain time you have to do this, or a certain time you're always doing that. That's not what I mean by scheduling. When I talk about scheduling, right. It's like creating some form of positive events or even alone time that the family understands that are important parts of your family dynamic and sticking to those, right? And I think that if that's what people are doing from a scheduling perspective, then that's a very positive thing.
Yeah, I like what you said there too. And I totally agree about just having a little bit of flexibility in the schedule first from spontaneity. So you can actually kind of instinctually go with the flow rather than saying, it's 10 o'clock. Okay, now I have to just drive this particular item home, you know? So I really enjoyed that part of it.
Yeah.
Just, it's a little more loose, but I don't think it means, you know, at the end of the day, we're always caught up on results and productivity, but it doesn't necessarily mean that things aren't happening. It just seems to flow more naturally in this time. And so it's kind of interesting to see how, you know, any of this sort of way of being will reflect, you know, the world 2.0 will look like when we kind of get through all this. You know, it'll be interesting. How do you manage the screens? So that's a big one. Cause I know my son, especially, like if I give him an iPad, he will sit there all day and he'll like crap his pants before he'll instead put it down. You know, it's crazy. Like, how do you schedule screen time?
Yeah. So basically what we do is we have rules in place around when you can't have screens, right? So essentially, and that what that does is that, again, it's almost like a mindset where the kids don't think that the screens are something that it's not a reward. It's not something that they like, you know, have thirst for, or, you know, it's really just the concept of, hey, these are times that we agree as a family that you're not going to be on a screen. So when you first wake up in the morning, you're not on a screen, right? During dinner time, you're not on a screen, right? Every other time, screen is option. If that's what you choose to do, you can be on it. But we know when mommy and daddy give you the 5-minute warning, right? So we always kind of do a 5-minute warning, you know, then you're off the screen, right? And listen, people are going to be like, yeah, awesome. Yeah, works for you. It doesn't always work for us, right? At the times, you know, that 5-minute warning sometimes turns into 7 minutes, right? 10 minutes, right?
Yeah.
But I think as long as you're consistent, and this is that's the word that every parent should, you know, that's the holy grail of any parent, right? Is consistency.
Yeah.
And again, it's harder said than done, you know, full asterisks around that one, right? But if you can remain consistent in that mentality of, you know, okay, these are the times that you can't have it. Everyone knows that, right? There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it, right? And when you're on it, when mommy and daddy give you the 5-minute warning, you're coming off, and then, you know, you work around that, just staying consistent, saying 5-minute warning. Okay, now we're off. And then being firm when it's time to come up. And if that means they walk off in a tantrum, then they go and cool down and you know, where I've seen, you know, obviously you're working strongly with your kids is teaching them the ability to channel emotions and work and understand emotions through breathing and that sort of stuff. You know, that's when they can utilize those types of tools. I know my middle son, he, you know, will have a hard time with it. And what he's found is a good default when he's upset to, you know, whether he's not happy with the decision is, you know, he's got his stuffies. And you know, some parents may think, oh, well, he's a little too old to have stuffies, but we're just fully embracing it because that's a security mechanism for him. And if it helps him soothe and cool down faster, and of course, you know, mentally, he's mental age. He's a lot younger than his physical age, but you know, there's no rules. There's no judgment. It's whatever works for the family. And we find if that's a mechanism that helps them deal and then come off the screens is if there's something that they enjoy that allows them to freely come off the screen, then that's what they get. It's not like they have to go and do from screens to, you know, computational mathematics, right? It's exactly. just getting off the screen is the goal, right?
That's it. Yeah, exactly. Do you do any type of meditation or mindfulness yourself?
Yeah, I do. It's a couple of things. So I learned about mindfulness through Dan Brown, and he wrote the book 10% Happier.
Right? Yeah.
So,
okay.
So I tend to be a bit of a skeptic on these types of things, and I saw an interview with Dan Brown, and it just resonated with me. I felt like he was talking to me specifically. I guess the little backdrop on Dan is he was an ABC news reporter, spent many years in the field, and I might butcher this, but field reporter during one of the Middle East wars. So whether it was the Iraqi war or I think it was the Iraqi war, came back suffering from PTSD, was dealing with it through the use of drugs and alcohol, and was slowly losing himself. And on TV, when he was being interviewed or when he was doing a segment, he had a panic attack and literally froze. And you could YouTube this or Google this, and you'll see it's there for everyone to see, is his panic attack. And so that led him to go and seek help. And then he tried all these different therapies. And basically, as a investigative journalist, scoffed at all of them and kind of, shut his mind off to them. And the one thing that he could deal with or had an effect on him was mindfulness. And he ended up reading a book saying, you know, does it change your life? Does it, you know, is it transformative? Is it all of these things that people profess it to be? It can be for some, but for him, his wife said, and this is where I started laughing because I can picture my wife saying this, is, you know, you're 10% less an asshole, right? I've noticed, like, since you've been doing this, you're 10% less an asshole. And for me, that's great because that's 10%, right? And so, and then when you wrote the book, he said, well, I can't call the book 10% less an asshole. So he's like, I'll call it 10% happier. And so that all those messages kind of resonated with me. So that set me off on my journey to mindfulness and why I connected with mindfulness so much. And it really, it's one of the simpler forms of meditation. It's relaxing. And I found tremendous benefits from it. Like, you know, I wish I had it earlier in my life because I was a very angry kid growing up. And, that anger often leads to different things that they're not productive things in life, right? So, but now in my 40s, and I would say I've been practicing mindfulness. I've been aware of mindfulness now for 6 or 7 years, like in the early stages. Early stages for when it became mainstream. But for me, it's had a tremendous impact on my life in terms of how I deal with stressful situations and my relationships. The other big factor for me that's contributed to helping me as a parent and even as a husband and employee and coworker is the concept of this growth mindset. There's an author by the name of Carol Dweck. She wrote a book called Growth Mindset, and there's actually a really great follow-up article done by the Harvard Business Review on that around, you know, what a growth mindset actually means. And if you take kind of reading her book and you combine it with the HBR review, HBR online article, and you really kind of use those two as doctrines around growth mindset, it really is so beneficial. And the book by Carol Dweck is amazing. She breaks it down into how you can use growth mindset in business, as a parent, in relationships. It's a great read, and I recommend that to anyone interested.
Yeah, every facet of your life. That is an amazing book, and I think that should be mandatory reading for everybody because it's an eye opener. And as much as you may believe your mindset is, you know, in the right place, she really has a way of and it's so repetitive, but we need that sometimes to really let that concept sink in, because we grow up and oftentimes in a very fixed mindset sort of setting. Well, that's great that you're practicing mindfulness, and you know, it's actually Dan Harris that is 10% happier. Yeah. And I get him confused with Sam Harris all the time, who's another mindfulness master. But
yeah, and I call him Dan's book was. Yeah, and I called him Dan Brown, and I called him Dan Brown, who I think is the Angels and Demons and Da Vinci guy.
That's right. Yeah, you know, another famous author. Exactly.
Yeah. Thanks for that. Good fact check.
Yeah, no problem. But Dan's book was really great, because at the end of the day, you know, when it comes to meditation, sometimes people expect some mystical experience, you know, or they think it's going to transport them to some place, and it can, if you have a deep practice, you know, there are you can go places, but in general, you know, to your point, just being mindful in your day-to-day aware, you know, experience, just being aware. And as you also mentioned earlier, without judgment of what's happening, you know, it just allows you just to manage everything that happens so much more, you know, more peacefully, more skillfully. I think it was, the John Kabat-Zinn quote, you can't stop the waves, but you can learn to surf. I mean, yeah, that's exactly what mindfulness is.
Yeah.
So that's great. So with kids, you know, they really have those mirror neurons turned on at full speed right now. So it's monkey see, monkey do. Being a calm parent like that, it must help them as well. Do you any specific practice with them, or do you ever use breathing to help them regulate or anything?
For sure. And you know, it's a great thing that I think the schools are catching on to. So it always helps that the schools are incorporating concepts of mindfulness. And it always depends on the teachers and the administrators as well. But I know all three of my kids have had some form of socialization to it at the school level. But at home, you know, it's often, you know, especially at a certain age. So for the younger kids, it's monkey see, monkey do, right? So I know our 5-year-old will see us doing it, and you know, she'll kind of mimic, and I'm like, oh, I saw you breathing there. Are you interested in it? And we'll talk about it. So she's actually gotten to a point where, you know, if she's having a bit of a meltdown, she'll put her hand on her heart, and she'll close her eyes, and she'll take 5 deep breaths, right? And so I've seen her do that on her own, which is, you know, that was a wonderful, proud dada moment on that.
Yeah.
And then my oldest, I mean, he's at a point now where, you know, it's, you know, he's very conscious of what's cool and uncool, right? And I love that about him right now. He's turning into like one of, you know, one of us, right? So he's getting to be, you know, a young adult. And what we did over the course of this break, where I created a schedule for him to mimic having some form of formal schedule like school would be, is a part of the morning, the first thing in the morning, it's a 5-minute body scan, or a video on mindfulness, or growth mindset. So what we do is, you know, there's an app for everything, right? So we have an app. It has a talk through narrated body scan. And, you know, I find that you look for the easiest kind of lowest barriers to entry, right? And a body scan is something that can easily be walked through, and it's more understandable, I guess, to a lot of people, right? So, and he actually, like, he likes it. He's like, Dad, can we do a body scan? I'm like, yeah. And then, you know, there's a lot of content on YouTube around, you know, cool, motivating, you know, mindfulness based videos that can be motivational. Some of them tend to be a little bit over the top, but that being said, you know, I think there's value in all of it. So that's another option to get them kind of, at least the older kids into it, right? It's if they see The Rock on there kind of screaming about something, it catches their attention, and hopefully the message sticks, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's great that you do that, brother. That is amazing. I mean, and to your point earlier, had we been subjected to mindfulness or some kind of practice in our early years, you can imagine how much easier navigating some of those early anger issues and things would have been. I mean, I had the exact same thing as anger that's not the motion of anger that's not properly channeled manifests in all kinds of ugly ways, especially in your early years.
I think we have that in common.
And you know, it's interesting. I did a, just a side note, I did a, just with the previous podcast, I had a guy on, Sandro Mota. He's a world-class breathwork trauma release expert. And I did a session with him, and it just happened to be, I am anger. And I don't feel anger so much anymore, but I know it's in my body. It's in my, in a cellular level still. Yeah. And, through that breath work, it was quite amazing. Like, it brought me to a place where I was actually like wailing and crying and letting stuff go from way, way back. It was pretty powerful.
Yeah. I believe in that stuff so much. I mean, we could spend another hour on that, right? Like, alone. I think, you know, there's a couple of things that stand out for me, and it's ridiculous, but I can't believe, like, the movie Boiler Room with Ben Affleck and Giovanni Ribisi was probably my first kind of awareness around this. Was there's a scene in there where I think Giovanni's about to go to jail. And, you know, he's talking with Nia Long, his girlfriend, and, you know, it's like, where did life go wrong? And he brings up the childhood traumatic event where he fell off his bike. And, you know, his father came running to him, and it was a pretty bad injury. And his father basically saw him crying, and he slapped him. And from that point, like, as a young child, you didn't understand what happened. And you go on, and you have this traumatic event, and then you harbor all these feelings, and you carry that through life. And that caused him to do what he believes caused him to be the person he became. You know, when he's going to jail, he confronts his dad about it. And his dad said, I loved you so much, right? Like, the sight of you in pain like that scared me and made me so angry at you for making me feel that way, that was my initial reaction, right? And so it's like, wow, right? Like, these confusions around these traumatic events and not being able to talk about it or understand them, you hold those in. I think back to a number of scenarios in my life that, you know, now that you have this awareness about where things come from, you know, there were these negative things that you just say, hey, man, I gotta work on this, and mindfulness and the concept of growth mindset is really helpful in dealing with those, for sure, 100%.
Yeah, and you know, like you said too, is when you have that awareness now as a parent, in those moments, you know, you may have that initial same feeling. You know, if your child does something, something might come back to you from your own childhood, but have that extra space, time to really know how to properly respond to a situation like that without reacting, I guess.
Yeah.
it could save our kids from having to deal with these crazy breath release trauma sessions.
Yeah. I mean, there's two core elements to it, right? It's, as parents, it's a being that mentor or teacher and helping guide them and creating, you know, a motivation and resiliency, and the ability to kind of take care of themselves, right? Like, that's ultimately what you want to be as a parent. And then the other piece, which is the simple piece, that's the easiest piece, and this is based on a book. The authors are they wrote the Whole Brain Child, I think, is what it's called. You're gonna have to fact check me on this, but I think it's Daniel Siegel. Daniel Siegel, and I know
Daniel Siegel, amazing.
Yeah, yes. The woman, I know her name for sure. It's Tina Payne Bryson. They wrote a book together. Whole Brain Child was their first book, but the second book, which is amazing, and spoke to me again, is, it's called The Power of Showing Up. And basically, they've done a ton of scientific research that at the end of the day, the main goal of a parent is just to be there for their child physically, and they break it down physically, emotionally, and spiritually. And then they get into spiritually a lot, because that can mean different things for different people. But it's really around those three concepts of being there and being present. And that shows all the positive effects that you want to have as a parent on your child, right? And there are so many ways in which, you know, we think we're physically here, but we're not available, right? And children are so, you know, they're not smart when it comes to academics at a young age, but when it comes to just connection and understanding, they're really, really, really smart. And we have to, as parents, that's the one thing that, I learned very quickly and still work to on this day is underestimating the emotional intelligence and the ability for children to connect and show that kind of maturity at a connection level. That is there from the start. It's innate in them. And you know, I think a lot of parents that are neglectful kill that in their kids by saying, hey, I want this connection. I'm not getting it. So kids learn to shut it down. And that's in the book, right? So that's a scary concept. And if you read the book, it's scary at the same time. And it's enlightening because at the end of the day, that's the one thing we can do. I may not be able to teach them how to fix something. I don't know how to change oil in a car. But I can be there for all of them, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's fucking brilliant, brother. I mean, that is it. And you said so many amazing things there, but they are wired perfectly, you know, and it's really through conditioning and all these horrible things that happen through their lives where they close off a lot of that emotion and connective ability. But like you said, man, just being there, fully present in the moment, not drifting away, thinking about some other shit going on or pissed off that somebody cut you off in traffic or some, you know, you had a disagreement with your spouse, but right there for them in that moment, and they can feel that. I've even noticed when there's times for me when I haven't been so present, you know, with my daughter, for example, and she's trying to get my attention. I'm not doing anything, so she deserves my full attention in that moment, where she just kind of like take my face and just kind of point it right into her eyes, you know, yeah. And I'm like, snap, wow, okay, I'm here, you know, and they know, like you said, that's incredible.
Yeah, it really is. And again, listen to anyone who's listening. It's there's no judgment, and I'm guilty as charged too. We all are, right? And that's the beautiful thing about this is it's awareness brings peace, right? And just know that you've done it. Don't put any judgments around good or bad, because that's actually one of the great things that come out of that book as well too. Is the question, the $1 million question, is okay, we're guilty of this. How do we fix it? And they say the fix is actually, it's a simple but not easy one in terms of, you know, it's through discussion, through talking. I think, one of the things that our parents never did is, I mean, can you count on your fingers how many times your father apologized to you for anything?
Yeah.
Right. But that concept of being able to apologize to your children and then talk to them about, you know, it's the world requires judgments on things. This is good. This is bad. This is good. This is bad. But let's, from a relationship perspective, take that aside. It's this happened. You wanted my attention. I wasn't able to give it to you. I'm sorry for that. Let's not label it good or bad, but now you have it. And let's move on, right? And so if you need to talk about it, sure, get your feelings out. Let's talk about it. But then from that point, we can move on when you're ready, right? And then when I say you're ready, the harmed person, right? Or the perceived harmed person can talk it through, and then you move on. And then if you teach them that ability to not create labels of good or bad, they say that it creates less lingering effects over time, because then they've removed that label of bad. So subconsciously, as they get older, they'll remember, they may not remember the specifics, but they'll remember it was bad, it was bad, it was bad. And then they'll create those emotions around it. So if you can take away those labels of good and bad, then it's almost like mindfulness. It's a breath. It comes in, it comes out, right? And you move on, right? So that's really powerful stuff.
Yeah, it's not good or bad. It just is.
Yeah.
That's it. Well, listen, brother, I think you and I could probably go on for 2 more hours, but we'll stop it there. But listen, I wanted to just acknowledge you, Jason, for showing up and doing this today. I know you weren't feeling it, but and also just for being such a good dad. Everything you said today was such wisdom.
It was my pleasure. Yeah. It was, you know, any reason to talk to you is a good reason, so I appreciate it. And the other thing is if we need to do another one where I talk about all the mistakes I've made just to make sure we have the full picture, I'm happy to do that too.
Exactly. Yeah, well, I'll think of a good title for that, like just the shit show episode or something. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
The fuck up dad.
Exactly. I haven't seen that book yet, so maybe there's an opportunity there.
Awesome.
All right, brother. Well, happy Friday to you and your family, my friend, and all the best.
Yeah, all the best to you, brother. Take care, man.